competition is an exciting moment for all schoolgoers, but the occasion turns more joyful if it ends with a celebration like Scarlet's Sales Festival, which is held in St. Petersburg in Russia at the end of the school year. The annual event is part of the famous White Nights Festival, traditionally held in summer with spectacular fireworks, numerous music concerts, and a massive water show. Normally, thousands of domestic and foreign tourists flock to the city to watch the colorful event. But this year, the COVID-19 pandemic limited the number of the attendees. The festival began in the 1960s when several Russian schools united to celebrate the end of the academic year. That is in connection with the symbolism of the popular 1922 children's book, Scarlet Sails, by Alexander Grin. Indonesia is dealing with a surge in coronavirus infections, but that has not stopped the people from observing the Yatnya Kasada Festival. Thousands of people brave the climb to the summit of Mount Bromo in eastern Java province to observe the ancient ritual. They made offerings ranging from fruits and crops to livestock by throwing the items to the pit of an active volcano. They believe the practice brings blessings and plenitude and helps them express gratitude for what they have. This year's festival was overshadowed by the coronavirus pandemic, with participants required to adhere to strict health protocols. China's space agency has released videos of its first Mars rover as it's exploring the red planet's surface. The rover is named Zhurong. It's now investigating a vast plane known as Utopia Planitia on Mars's northern hemisphere. The rover successfully landed on Mars in mid-May. It is studying the red planet's surface rocks and atmosphere. It also looks for signs of life, including any subsurface water or ice. The solar-powered Chinese robot weighs around 240 kilograms and has 6 wheels. China is the second country after the U.S. to operate a rover on Mars. A university in the Venezuelan capital Caracas has turned its roof into a garden and uses sustainable energy to light up its classes. The roof of Andres Bello Catholic University is covered with plants and 30 solar panels. The panels, along with a wind turbine, produce the 7,400 watts of electricity to illuminate that area and light 2 rooms in the building. The roof is now functioning as a self-sufficient and environmentally friendly open-air classroom. The proposal for the project was put forward by 2 students. The aim is to educate people about renewable energy and the threat of climate change.
A small New Hampshire town has been hit by a series of car break-ins over the last few weeks. People were shocked when they finally discovered the mischievous criminal. A large black bear has been identified as the bandit wreaking havoc in the town of Thornton. The naughty mammal was caught on camera as it got on its 2 hind legs and skillfully opened the door of a car. Police say the bear was most likely rummaging for food. Authorities have asked people to remove food from their cars to avoid enticing the troublesome animal. A Jordanian woman is receiving high demands for the soap she produces. Why? Because she uses an unusual ingredient. Lara Altiti makes soap out of camel milk. She tours different cities in Jordan to find the best camel farms for her business. Titi uses camel milk as the major ingredient for the soap she produces. That's because she says it has rich benefits and contains more vitamins than cow milks.
The first stage includes weighing the soap, and I include different kinds of oil to preserve the quality of the soap and its therapeutic benefit. We need to have high foam and tough consistency, and we don't want it to be rancid. We place high importance on the therapeutic material that we add during the production process.
Titi started her soap line at home using a manual process and then expanded it to an independent workshop. Her soap line has now become very popular in Jordan. Titi produces more than 4,000 soap bars a month. She sells them both to domestic and international customers.
If you're a car lover, this story is for you. Over 300 classic vehicles have taken part in a retro rally across Estonia. The 1,000-kilometer rally kicked off in the town of Perde. It drew participants from Latvia and Finland. Their motto is Straight Ahead to the Past. The vintage cars participated in the event are mostly produced between 1930 and 1980. Experts say all the vehicles are in good condition. However, they doubt if all the vehicles can make it to the end of the five-day rally.
The German firm's electric air taxi takes its first flight at a show in an airport near the French capital, Paris. Volocopter's flying taxi, which looks like a tiny helicopter, took off and landed vertically over the airport with no passenger on board during a three-minute trial. Aside from its two-passenger capacity, the aircraft also has some room for luggage. It flew a 500-meter route at speeds of up to 30 kilometers per hour and 30 meters high along the airfield. The flying taxi service would first be operated by a licensed pilot, but the flight would be fully automated over a period of time.
With respect to regulation, initially we will have a fully certified, fully licensed helicopter pilot just to fit into existing regulation. But we believe over time it can be much simpler to obtain such an operating license for a volocopter. And of course, in the last instance, we want to take a pilot requirement out and we want these vehicles to fly fully automated. So you will not need a pilot license anymore. You can just summon the volocopter. It will come and pick you up and bring you safely to your destination.
The German firm is entering the urban mobility market with high hopes of playing a major role in the infant industry. Volocopter says its objective is to have a service in operation for the 2024 Olympic Games. Walking around the city without shoes can be delightful. If you're interested in the experience, visit the Russian capital. A 3.5-kilometer-long barefoot trail has recently opened in Moscow's Elk Island Park. It's made of various materials such as pine bark, beach pebbles, and clay. Taking around 40 minutes to complete, the path attracts hundreds of visitors every day. However, some people find it difficult to walk without shoes, calling the path a torture trail. A zoo in Turkey has welcomed a baby elephant from an endangered species. The birth of a female calf at Izmir Wildlife Park has caused excitement in keepers and visitors. The calf, yet to be named, is the third offspring of parents from Asian species. The International Union for the Conservation of Nature classifies the Asian elephant as endangered due to their rapid decline in the wild. The Asian elephants are primarily threatened by poaching, fragmentation, and loss and degradation of habitat. Currently, around 20 to 40,000 Asian elephants are living across the world, five of which inhabiting Turkey's Izmir Zoo.
Palestinian artist has come up with the idea of making children feel happy after the recent Israeli aggression on the besieged Gaza Strip left many people dead. Amna Sami is a young Palestinian artist who has gathered Palestinian kids in the city of Beit Lahia, north of Gaza. That's where houses were destroyed by Israeli airstrikes and bombings during the recent aggression on the territory. Sami draws the Palestinian flag as well as the map of Palestine on children's cheeks as patriotic symbols. She says she does that to say that these people in the midst of destruction will become strong again. Sami says by painting on kids' faces, she wants to send a message to the world.
I'm sending a message to the world that our children should live like other children in the world, away from danger and destruction. It is their right in life to live as children in a safe place, a place that gives them something to live a normal life.
Palestinian kids say they feel happy when Sami paints their faces. The Israeli regime launched its devastating onslaught on Gaza in early May. At least 256 Palestinians, including 66 children, were killed during the 11-day war. A Turkish band has found musical inspiration in a most unlikely place, a local landfill. Here's more. Members of Funk Istanbul have assembled instruments from the dump in a junkyard in Istanbul. They use their ingenious new tools to play Turkish folk music. The band aims to raise awareness about recycling. Turkey is one of the biggest producers of municipal waste globally. The country has a low recycling rate. Only 12% of waste is repurposed there.
Technology has come in handy to rescue animals in disaster zones. American cinematographer Douglas Thron has used a high-tech infrared drone to save animals from fire or storm, or even those who are stuck in trees. The drone he uses has a large thermal camera, a spotlight, and zoom lens. The good point is that the aerial vehicle does not make too much noise. Therefore, it does not scare away animals.
So what I do is I fly infrared drones primarily at night over disaster areas after a hurricane or a fire hits, and I look for people's pets, whether it be cats or dogs, and I also look for injured wildlife, and then either I or rescue crews will go in and rescue the animals after I spot the animals after these natural disasters.
Thron has so far rescued hundreds of stranded animals in various places in the US and Australia. Emergency services have allowed him to participate in rescue efforts after making sure that the drone works well to achieve its goal.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A video has gone viral showing animals at a U.S. zoo enjoying their bath time becoming clean as a new pimp. Keepers at Chicago's Brookfield Zoo washed the animals to celebrate International Bath Day. From anteaters to rhinos all got sprayed with a water hose. They seemed to love their bath time as it kept them cool in the summer heat. Zoo officials say the occasion is to honor ancient Greek scientist Archimedes, who made a discovery while in the bath. You might be pleased to know life is going back to normal as countries around the world are easing coronavirus restrictions. Disneyland in the French capital of Paris is saying bonjour to visitors once again with all necessary precautions. But everyone missed that. The theme park reopened its doors to the public with limited tickets and an online reservation system. All visitors over 6 years old are required to wear face masks and to observe social distancing guidelines. New attractions, including a hotel and various car rides, are also available for guests. Disneyland Paris was shut for over 7 months due to rising COVID-19 infections. This is the first time since January 2020 that all the six Disney resorts are open. Children have their own ways of remembering the dead. In Gaza, Palestinian kids fly kites in memory of their peers who lost their lives in the recent Israeli onslaught. Dozens of kids participated in the event, holding kites bearing the pictures of 66 little victims. According to the organizers, the goal was to send a message to people around the world that Palestinian kids have the right to live a free and happy life. The children said their dream is to fly in the sky without any restrictions or wars. A herd of wild Asian elephants in China has turned into international stars after leaving their natural habitat in Yunnan province. The herd of 15 elephants is said to have left home in southwest China 15 months ago, but it was in April when they grabbed officials' attention after they were spotted by locals. The elephants have so far trekked nearly 500 kilometers across the country. They have traveled through villages and towns and even stopped for a rest. Local authorities have welcomed these mammoth travelers with treats of sweet corn and bananas. They are monitoring the elephants' movements with drones while keeping them away from residential areas.
Chinese grandma has given a dazzling display of her masterly kung fu performance at a martial arts competition. The 98-year-old woman and her son took the stage as a curtain raiser to the event. The duo put on a kung fu show before a large crowd of spectators who were impressed by her skillful gestures. She was invited to the competition to act as a judge.
I started practicing martial arts when I was only five. I would box every day, learning movements like chopping, pushing palm, and thrusting palm. Though I am old now, my strength hasn't gone.
Zhang says she's inherited her family's martial arts. She's rumored to have a sense of justice from a very young age and try to help others, which earned her quite a reputation where she lives. Traditional martial arts have been passed down in the Zhongqing village located in Zhejiang province for 500 years.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. To all our brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. This is Islamic Upbringing, where we discuss the issues and topics related to the Islamic upbringing of our children, who are our future and the future of our communities. Now, to help us, we have with us Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi. Assalamu alaikum, Sayyid Abdullah. Thank you very much for giving us your time.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. It's a pleasure being here with you.
All right, thank you very much. So we're talking about the methods that we will be practicing in raising our children. Last time we talked about creating better role models so that they won't have to take to role models that might drive them to inappropriate places and inappropriate activities. We talked about the importance of playing, now whether it's on a digital device, on some console, on a computer, or whether it's a physical activity, like playing with the playing with Legos. What is the next method that we're going to have to learn?
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه. Another method that we need to adopt as parents is what I call linking. And inshallah I'll explain what that means. The child's mind always works by linking one thing to another. For example, if I want to teach my child bravery, right, he will try to link it to something else. For example, as we were kids, we link it to Imam Ali alayhi salam, for example. Or he links it, for example, to a superhero. So there's always, in the mind, always trying to link a concept to something else that he could feel and interact with, and as we, what we say, tangible in the outside. We need to create links between things in the outside to the concept that they have in their mind. So, for example, if a mother has a child and the child is afraid to go into a dark room by himself, for example, or he's scared from a dark room, what she does is she talks to the child and she says to him, you know what, brave heroes, or the brave heroes or the strong heroes or those who, you know, have this capacity, they never afraid of from the dark. So she's trying to link that fear and bravery don't go along together very well. That if you're afraid, then obviously there's something wrong. But if you're brave, you're not going to be scared from the dark. If she links that in his mind, then the child, you'll see that slowly, slowly, he will not be scared from darkness, for example. So there are many things in life that we have concept in our heads. And there are concepts that we need to give our children. Okay, we need to put concept in their heads. So we need to link it to something that triggers that thing in their head. One of the methods that we use when it comes to linking things, for example, if your child does something good, right, reward it, either with a word, with a gift, or with something, so that he links this reward to that concept. For example, I remember when we were children, our parents would say to us, if you pray, for each prayer, I will give you like 10 cents, for example, or a dollar, what have you. So I link salah to what?
Making money.
Not just making money. Having a bit of, you know, incentive. There's an incentive for praying, right? So this link. Or for example, when I do my homework and my father, for example, comes and he, you know, gives me a good word or he speaks nicely to me, I link that to it. So it becomes a good thing. So everything that we need to have our children practice, we need to link it to something else that they can...
So just to be clear, are we going to be linking concepts to practices or practices to concepts? Like, you're doing this because it's bravery or because you're braver doing this?
It works both ways, and sometimes we need to even install
these
concepts in their heads and link things to them.
Okay, thanks. Let's take a short break. After the break, we're done with the methods, am I right? These are the methods that more or less that we're going to be covering.
Inshallah.
Okay, so join us after the break because I still have a question about one method. Don't go away.
I am a Muslim, Islam my deen, Allah my Lord, His word Quran, Muhammad Prophet, peace be upon him. I am a Muslim for all of time. Someday, somehow, my journey here will.
You're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. This is Islamic Upbringing. We're talking about methods for raising our children. Now, Sayyid Abdullah, we've been talking about various kinds of methods and giving a short summary on each of them, and I really enjoyed it. But there was one method which I was thinking about, and you never pointed out to, and that was forcing children, because we're grown-ups and we think we know the right way to live. So we also find ourselves entitled to force them into a particular path, a particular career, a particular whatever else, mentality or whatever. You didn't point out to forcing children. Is it because we shouldn't force children? Or Is there something else on your mind?
All right, so it is not a method, but it is a mistake. It is one of the biggest mistakes parents make, is that they try to mold the child into who they are. For example, if I'm a doctor, I want my son to be a doctor. And through the process, because I want my son to be a doctor, so what happens is I will make him read a lot, study a lot, spend more time in the home, in the room, away from playing, away from many things. Why? Because I want him to be a doctor, and I know what it means to be a doctor, right? So I try to impose so many things on the child into making him a doctor. I'm trying to mold him. And that basically kills everything. And that, like I said, this is just one big topic that, inshallah, we will talk about later on. But one of the things this method does, or this mistake does, it kills their personality. He becomes a zombie, another word. He's just doing what he's being told. And this works, mind you, on both fields. So, for example, on the academic field, we want our kids to be something. And also on the religious field works on the same thing. For example, if you have a father who is, he himself, memorized the Quran and wants his kids to memorize the Quran. And he pushes that envelope against them. So that should, you know, the child says, well, I don't want to learn Quran, for example. I don't have the capacity even to memorize the Quran. Or I don't have the capacity to be a doctor, for example. You know what? I don't want to even be anything. I want to be my own. I want to be, for example, my father wants me to be a doctor. Actually, I want to be an accountant. That's what I like. But parents make that mistake by trying to mold their children into something they want to be. That itself is a very dangerous thing to be done, and a huge mistake.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break. I'm going to try to rephrase what you said just after the break, just to make sure that we all understood it correctly. Don't go away.
The Prophet ﷺ said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
You're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. We are with Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi on Islamic upbringing, and we're discussing various methods to raise children. So just before the program, I asked you about parents who try to force their children in a particular career or a particular path. The misunderstanding is that children can be molded into anything. And what you're saying is that there's no such thing. Children come with their own personalities or their own likes and dislikes. So raising a child is more about discovering and guiding them rather than trying to shape them, carve out of them what we think is right.
We're not saying, just to correct you there, we're not saying you cannot mold the child. Obviously, you can mold the child. But if you remember the example that I gave you of the tree, if you take a stem of a tree and you try to, you know, shape it, it will go up straight. But if you let it go, it will become bent, and then the branches go everywhere. You can mold a child, but the result of molding that child is not going to be fruitful. For example, I could make my child become a doctor, and he could be a doctor as well, you know. Mm-hmm. But what kind of doctor am I giving to the world if he hates that kind of practice? Or I know one of my friends, he's a doctor, right? He's a grown-up man, he's a doctor, right? He's a practicing doctor. And he sits on his Wii pad and he jumps around, you know, trying to do the movement in the game. And I'm looking at this guy, right? He's in his 40s and he said, I never wanted to be a doctor, right? And so I'm saying to myself, what kind of a doctor would we have? What kind of practitioners would we have? What kind of Qurra or Ulama would we have if they, when they were kids, they were forced into it? So you could mold them, but they won't give you the result that you're after. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created everyone differently, and He wants everyone to take a special job in their life. Let them choose who they want to be, not you making them who they are or what you are. You know what I mean? So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you know, in life, I might not need a doctor. I might need something else. Maybe my child was destined to be something else, that to serve a specific goal in life. If I mold him to be a doctor just like me, then I had deprived him of his actual goal that was set for him. Or the, let's say, where he would have, you know, or prospered and where he would have flourished and gave something to life and to people.
And
why?
Be happy at the same
and
time.
And be happy at the same time. So that's what we're saying. And like I said, in this process, there are a lot of things happen. Like in trying to force a child, not only you kill his creativity, not only you make him a person who is an introvert, you not only deprive him of his identity. So many things happen to him.
It's going to have very heavy repercussions.
Yeah, because this is not what he wants to be. So we should not mold the child, but rather we should work with the child. See what he wants. You know, for example, I had one of the young boys talk to me recently, and he said, well, my father's pressuring me to be a doctor. I don't want to be a doctor. I want to be an economist. I love economy. What should I do? Please my father or please myself? And it's really tricky, especially when you're talking about it from an Islamic perspective, considering that the child has to obey his parents and should not, you know, because we have all the ayat, you know, be good to your father, never say no to them. And then you have the child who's from a Muslim background. He finds himself stuck in this loophole. Should I go against my father and bring the wrath of Allah against me? Or should I follow my father's orders and then I lose my own life in the process?
Yeah, I think, but parents cannot control the lives of their... I mean, in the end of the day, everyone has their own lives, am I right?
Mm.
And everyone will be held accountable for their own lives.
Of course. Well, that's the idea. This is the mentality that the parents need to have. I will give my son all the tools and all the means he needs to create his own personality,
mm-hmm.
not to create it for him.
So it's about discovering, not molding.
Ahsan.
Thank you. That's all the time that we have, unfortunately. But if you missed the program, don't worry. You can always download an archive of this episode and all our previous episodes from our website. Simply visit parstoday.com. That's parstoday.com. Find the Call of Islam link, and you will see us right there. Islamic upbringing. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. That's englishradio@irib.ir. And also you can communicate with us directly through our social media accounts. Search at Call of Islam Radio on Instagram, Telegram, YouTube, and Twitter. Until next episode, happy parenting. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned, perfect with no flaws at all, are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islam my deen.
Islam my deen.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, boys and girls, and other life forms. You are listening to the one, the only youth station brought to you by Arab English Radio. I'm Zainab.
And I'm Mehdi, and welcome to Youth Station.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, bro. How are you doing?
I'm alright, I'm not bad. How are you?
Alhamdulillah. So it's been 6 months from the beginning of 2021, right?
Yeah.
And I would definitely say that it's been a very weird
year and a half.
It's been a very weird 18 months. And especially 2020,
mm-hmm.
It was basically on crack, right?
Yeah, it was.
So that was 2020. And then I think people really felt like 2021 ought to bring better things for them. It should be like a turning point. Things are going to get better. The pandemic's going to get better. The political state of the world is going to get better. And how would you
it has gotten better for some people, hasn't it? Because people who are introverts or people who have not liked the outer world really
present
yes. And they've actually benefited, and they won't mind for this pandemic to go on and on.
I mean, aside from the fact that my heart and soul goes out to those people who've been afflicted by this pandemic, it really does, genuinely does, right? Heart and soul doesn't go out very often, but just like me, we don't go out very often. But when it does, it goes, and it's genuine, and it's like dressed to the nine. But I feel like...
But on the other hand, the same people who have the issues with their sense of security, right? Sense of security, not insecurity. Sense of security, like
physical security,
physical security,
safe, okay,
right? Safety, yeah. They have gotten more vulnerable compared to what they were before,
true.
Haven't they?
So true.
Right, and they've got these other things that they have to deal with that they never thought they'd have to deal
exactly.
with. And they've got to build themselves up now to obviously face these things that
definitely
coming their way.
And where are you standing in terms of the struggles of 2020 and 2021? I personally don't think the state of the world has been any different than 2020. Mm-hmm. The pandemic is still ongoing. They killed just as important people as they did last year. A lot of...
They. You're right.
Air quote. A lot of horrendous things have been resurfacing or reoccurring or being addressed. I mean, just yesterday I was reading the news that Canada summoned the Pope to take responsibility for the mass graves that have been found. Saying this, my lungs feel so constricted and I can barely breathe. The mass graves that they found in the boarding schools for the indigenous people. That's horrendous.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't say the world has changed at all. I think we've just been like numbed out. We've been desensitized. I have friends that are still in lockdown. Like legit a year and a half, they barely left their homes. They barely went to see anyone. They still don't take their masks off. They still put alcohol and disinfectants on their entire body every time they step out of the threshold of their door.
Well, that's pretty much something that you have to do, right? That's the
protocol. And then I have another friend that just came back from Greece.
Yeah, they've gotten used to it, right? Is the person now like that? Well, was he always like that since the first day?
They went with the flow of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, lockdown, let's stay at home and not touch anyone for 2 weeks.
So what's the reason that these people do not...
Two, three, four, 5 months. And then they were like, that's not... I think the thing, well, I don't want to make this episode about the pandemic.
Yeah.
We're trying to focus more about where to find courage, or whether we need courage, more courage than ever during the year 2021. Right? On one hand, we feel like, oh, 2020 is over and things have probably settled a little bit and the political state of the world is a tad bit more like docile, but it's not. Because then Ramadan and Gaza was being bombarded. After that, ceasefire. After that, Silwan. And then that thing happened to city storm.
Oh, the Capitol.
Yes.
What's it called?
Yeah, they've stormed Capitol Hill. And then all of that happened in 2021. I'm saying whatever was going sideways during 2020 is continuing on its sideway path.
These people.
Which people?
The people who are casual now and people who just came back from Greece, shout out to your friend, they've gotten used to the life now, right?
Yeah. Or is that a bad thing?
No. No. I do not support not taking care of yourself and not being careful.
They didn't get infected. I mean, obviously, they took enough care not to get infected.
Yeah, but there are some people who are asymptomatic. But as you said, it's not about the virus. Yeah, so initially, this is hypothetical. You were a person who was very insecure, unsafe. You had you felt unsafe. I don't know if there's a word for it.
Yeah.
And you might not have been very confident about yourself. This might have helped you, by the way.
The pandemic?
Yeah, yeah.
Sitting at home?
Yeah, and not being in direct
exposed.
Contact yet, contact with people.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, when you do not feel safe, you tend to stay away from things, right?
Mm.
And now that you know, there are things that you do not see, but and things that you may not, what do you call it, predict or foresee, or there's another term for it. And you have to prepare yourself for that, for the unexpected, or something that you do not know how that will affect you, right?
All right, all right. You're listening to Youth Station. We're going to be back after a short message, so stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, brothers and sisters, and other life forms. This is Youth Station. I'm Zainab. My bro here is Brother Mehdi. And we are talking about courage during 2021. And you were saying that this is actually a good thing for those who feel those have security issues. Insecurity, actual security issues, and they feel like, oh my God, something bad could happen to me if I am exposed to the outer world.
Yeah, it could include practical people and also superstitious people. You know. Anyone could be concerned about his own safety.
But we were talking about the fact that a lot of people have just gone back to normal lives, and whether or not that's a good thing, whether it's a display of courage, or is it that they're indifferent, whether it's safe to assume our normal lives, or is there anything normal to assume anymore even?
Yeah.
Was the world ever normal?
No, that's the new normal, isn't it now?
Yeah. See, this is the thing, bro. As human beings, I think one of our most profound, spectacular...
traits.
Salient, valuable... Did I say valuable?
I don't know. Remember.
And natural... Right?
Right?
All the while, natural attributes is our ability to adapt.
Yeah.
We adapt like that.
Yeah, but that's you, probably. You're saying we, as a
human. No, we
as human,
a species, we adapt.
We
adapt like nobody's business. The world, the Earth, planet Earth, has been like through a plethora of changes and evolution and revolution and wars and this and that, and almost every species has once come and been extinct except
us.
We're like thick-skinned, man.
Why is that? Is that because we're brave? Because we're talking about
I
courage?
Think it's because we're intelligent.
that's the reason why it is, yeah. But some people are very sensitive to that, right? They can't take change very easily. And
I don't take change very easily either, but as a species, we adapt. That's
right.
The only thing I think we've been really programmed to do. Just adapt the hell out of it.
There are certain people within us who...
within our community?
Within the species.
Aha, right, of course. Thank you for clarifying.
Who make it easier for others, like some people who do not take change that comfortably, who make it easy, who make them feel that it's not happening really where it is, right? And they go, they don't feel it that it's happening, but they go easily with it. That's thanks to those people who have made it easy for us. For example, do you know what I'm saying? No.
No.
For example, people who made social media apps.
Yeah.
People who made food delivery easy.
Yep.
Right? Things like those. If those weren't there, it would have been much difficult for people.
Nah.
No?
Nah.
What do you mean?
If you go back in history 200 years with the knowledge that you have today, you'd be like, ugh, life back then sucked. How did they manage even?
Right.
But for the person living 200 years ago, that was like they were living their best lives. I've got running water a tad bit. Look, they've started with the whole
railway
system.
What was it?
Wars had never even happened yet. And they were like, this is good. This is good. Life is good.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the pandemic in this year, right?
Mm.
What was it? The Black Death. That's what it was called.
The plague that came
sweeped
Europe.
200 million people.
Didn't the Black Plague happen?
That was 1347 and 1351 to 1351, right?
Okay, that was
so
a bajillion
consider
years ago.
Well, yeah, 1,000. No. Well,
like 800 years
800
ago.
Years ago. So imagine these facilities that you have right now. These. Are you saying that if it was back there, it wouldn't have helped you?
It would have, but we didn't find the need for it because we had adapted as a species, not you and I, Zainab and Mehdi. We as a species had adapted. We had developed the courage to deal with that situation with the facilities and the capabilities and the capacity that we had 800 years ago. That's what I'm trying to say, bro. I'm trying to say that as a species, right, one which possesses the highest level of intellect among all of Allah's creations, right, we have been equipped with the ability to adapt with every and any given situation, call it natural selection, call it Darwin's theory, call it whatever you may, but often it is labeled as courage.
Hmm.
We as a species have the courage to explore our different options, to lay out plans and blueprints and think of different scenarios of how to make something work out for us, how to deal with it, to experiment, to do this, to do that, and to just mold and navigate the situation to have the best outcome and result for our species. That's all the time we have for today's episode of Youth Station. Thank you so very much for being with us. I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator. My Alpha and Omega, my protector and my because of you, in weakness I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker, abiding in silence with patience and guidance.
Mehrabad Airport. A new airplane has arrived in Iran after more than three decades. Purchasing this airplane from Airbus Company was made possible by the Iran nuclear deal, known as the JCPOA. In 2018 alone, Iranian aviation companies transported some 30 million passengers via local and international flights. The task was achieved by 18 airlines, with a total of 150 active airplanes. Iran's civil aviation industry was one of the first sectors to be restricted and sanctioned during the first days of the Islamic Revolution of 1979. As the scope of the sanctions expanded in the following years, the development of this industry was slowed down to an extent that some of the neighboring countries that had founded their aviation industry decades after Iran got ahead. Despite the pressure on it and the loss of money and lives due to the existing demand in the country and the support given by the government, Iran's aviation industry was able to survive and continue its activities. Now, the question that comes to mind is how an industry which was completely imported from outside not only remained in business, but also achieved growth. How were they able to purchase airplanes? How did Iran find the professional human resources and specialists? Do international regulations match the sanctions imposed on the industry? In an industry which the life cycle of all parts and equipment are inspected under international regulations, how did Iran get the spare parts and certificates needed to continue to work? When the Iran nuclear deal was signed in 2015, what opportunities opened to the industry?
The JCPOA for aviation was not fair play. They designed a very dirty play against the aviation industry of Iran.
This is an inside story of efforts made to keep this very modern industry running, despite the harsh sanctions levied against Iran. With the establishment of companies such as Iranian Airways and Persian Air Services in the 1940s, Iran's civil aviation industry began its work. However, the official start of this industry in Iran dates back to the year 1962. On February 24 of that year, the government ordered the merger of Iran Airways and Persian Air Services, establishing the Iranian National Airline, or Iran Air, as a state-run flag carrier air service company. Iran Air, which is also known as HOMA, grew quickly due to the support lent by the government, and in the 1970s blossomed into a successful airline. In 1975, Iran Air was the fastest growing airline in the world, with dozens of flights to European countries per week. Iran was also among the first countries in the world to purchase the Boeing 747SB, which was the most modern airplane of the time. After buying the aircraft, Iran was able to launch one of the longest non-stop air services between Tehran and New York at the time. Captain Abdullahi, who is currently the oldest living pilot in Iran, was in charge of Iran Air flight operations back then. Iran Air was in full blossom. However, when it came to maintenance, it was totally dependent on foreign companies. With the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran, many Westerners who worked in various industries, including the aviation industry, left the country. The exit of these Western specialists was a big shock to the industry, prompting the local forces to fill the void. Four days after the U.S. Embassy takeover in Tehran, on November 8, 1979, the control tower at New York's JFK Airport contacted an Iran Air airliner as it was approaching for landing. It informed the captain that due to political tensions between the United States and Iran, the passenger plane had been denied permission for landing in all U.S. airports. The aircraft was then forced to fly onto Canada for landing. From then on, all flights between Tehran and New York, among the longest nonstop flight routes, were canceled. Over the course of the next four decades, and under different pretexts, the scope of U.S.-imposed sanctions on Iran expanded. U.S.-imposed sanctions on Iran included a network of interconnected restrictions imposed on the Iranian nation by both the U.S. President and Congress. The sanctions targeted economic investments in Iran, the oil and aviation industries, science and technology firms, and even the country's central bank. As a result of the unilateral U.S. sanctions, other countries, too, were practically unable to do business with the Islamic Republic. This was because the sanctions targeting the international business firms and governments which wanted to do business with Iran would either be punished by the U.S. or risk losing their ties with the U.S. In the past couple of years, it has practically become impossible for Iran to purchase airplanes or its spare parts from manufacturing companies across the globe. This dire situation has forced Iranian airlines to either seek spare parts via unofficial channels or through third parties. The sanctions ban Iran from obtaining equipment and spare parts, which use more than 10% by value of U.S. technology or services for their production. The situation has prevented Iran from purchasing new airplanes for decades, turning Iran's air fleet into one of the oldest in the world. But how do the sanctions work, and what impact do they have on the country's aviation industry? To better understand this matter, different aspects must be reviewed separately.
Unfortunately, the sanction we have imposed on us has impacted the entire air transport industry. It's not only airlines. We have seen that also airport, air navigation system, also the process of transferring money from Iranian airline to other airlines have been affected.
Due to the high prices of new airplanes, they are purchased via companies that provide financial services. Finance companies act as go-betweens and sign a contract with the buyer to purchase an airplane from the manufacturer.
We are looking everywhere in the market, but we cannot lease aircraft from the very famous leasing companies because they don't work like Iran due to lack of OFAC license. So we have to go to the open market brokers, which it takes time and, of course, more expensive for us.
An unofficial market with limited sellers in it, in addition to the problems related to financing the purchases and the difficulty of transferring money. Iranian airlines were left with few options, forcing them over the years to buy any type of airplane that they could get their hands on. Having an old fleet is not a problem per se, as long as the necessary maintenance is done to the planes and the spare parts needed for them are available. However, in Iran's case, the bans and restrictions they employ for the routine repairs and maintenance